Welcome to the Hawley Baptist Church podcast, connecting you to a community in which everyone is welcome, lives are changing, and Jesus is King. Thanks for joining us today. You can subscribe to keep up to date with us. Did you know you can also join our service each Sunday via a live online meeting? Please get in touch to find out more about that. But for now, we pray you enjoy what God has in store for you in this episode and that it helps change your life for the better. In Jesus' name, welcome.
Good morning and welcome to the HBC podcast on this Sunday morning or whenever you're watching. My name's Stu.
And I'm Richard.
And yeah, we add our welcome. So this morning we are continuing our series. This is going to be from Nehemiah 5. The title of today, I think, is Working Together and Winning Together. So I think that's going to be pretty interesting and challenging. So we're just going to have the reading now. And then we're going to have a look at what Martin has to say.
Nehemiah was a man who saw the brokenness of his city and refused to look away. His journey of prayer, courage, opposition and teamwork shows us that God is still in the business of rebuilding lives, communities and hope.
This reading is based on Nehemiah chapter 5. Now there was a great outcry among the people and their wives against their fellow Jews, some saying, "We and our sons and daughters are numerous. We need grain to eat and stay alive." Others said, "We are mortgaging our fields and homes to buy grain." Still others said, "We have borrowed money to pay the king's tax. We are having to sell our children into slavery. Though we are of the same flesh and blood as our fellow Jews, we are powerless." When Nehemiah heard their complaints, he was very angry. After thinking it over, he accused the nobles and officials. "You are charging your own people interest." He called a large meeting and said, "What you are doing is not right. Shouldn't you walk in the fear of our God?" He told them to give back the fields, vineyards, homes, and the interest they had charged. They agreed, saying, "We will give it back and not demand anything more." They took an oath in front of the priests, and Nehemiah shook out his robe and said, "May God shake out anyone who does not keep his promise." The assembly praised God, and the people did as they had promised. Nehemiah, though appointed governor, did not take the food allowance or place heavy burdens on these people. Instead, he worked on the wall with others. Every day, 150 people ate at his table, and he provided for them himself. He prayed, "Remember me with favour, my God, for all I have done for these people."
Well, good morning. Great to see you guys. So we're carrying on our sermon series, Rebuilding the Walls, the story of Nehemiah. You might want to grab a Bible. I do not have time to do slides this morning. So there's Bibles at the front, Bibles at the back there. You might have a Bible app on your phone. If you want a website, Bible Gateway is quite a good one. I use that a lot. We're going to be looking at Nehemiah chapter 5. So do grab one of those if you have got one. Sure. And by the way, what you saw, heard, read there was a paraphrase. It was a, what do they call it? It's not what's actually written here. We just shortened it a little bit. So we're encouraging you guys to read through the account yourself. And if you collect one of these by the pay machine, you can read through the story of Nehemiah. There's a few extra Bible readings there as well. Recently, a report was commissioned by air conditioning manufacturer Andrew Sykes to ask the question, what gets Brits hot under the collar? You might see the link there. And they come up with a few things that get Brits, and what gets us angry, what works us up, what gets our blood boiling. And maybe some of these resonate with you. See if any of them do. So this is what it came up with. Train delays, roadworks, being sat in traffic. That gets me every time. Any cyclists in here? Cyclists who don't obey the highway code, such as skipping red traffic lights. Queuing for a long time. I have to admit, I have to send my wife to go and queue, but I can't stand it. And drivers who don't use their indicators. So a lot of this seems to revolve around road rage here. I mean, what gets you angry? I have to admit, what gets me angry is Alexa not listening to me. That really gets me worked up. No one should be spoken to like I speak to Alexa. It's terrible. But perhaps a more sensible, serious list from the NHS. These are things that get us angry. Stressful day-to-day things like rush hour traffic or paying bills. Being interrupted when you're trying to achieve a goal. Other people not respecting your authority, feelings or property. Feeling threatened or attacked. Feeling powerless or being treated unfairly. See, all of us are different, but all of us get angry at some point. Some more so than others. And anger is a funny thing. It can lead us down some very bad roads, but actually anger can drive us to make a positive change in our life or the life of others. Maybe we get angry when we see an injustice, we see something wrong, and it drives us to do something about it. Being angry is not necessarily a wrong thing. Jesus himself got angry, and it drove him to do something about it. And in our passage today, in chapter 5, verse 6, Nehemiah tells us, because our passage is written in the first person, it's Nehemiah speaking to us. In verse 6, he says, when I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry. Not just a little bit miffed, but absolutely fuming. And it led Nehemiah to do something. Now, we'll see what he was angry about in a moment. But we've noticed, or you've noticed, hopefully, as we've gone through this sermon series on part 3 now, that Nehemiah was a man who felt things deeply. He was emotive, and it drove him to take risks and bring about change. So when right at the beginning, we read about how Nehemiah had heard about the plight of his people living in Jerusalem. So just a bit of a backstory. The great Babylonian Empire had completely ransacked the city of Jerusalem, destroyed it, knocked everything flat, and taken anything of worth and any people of worth out of Jerusalem and back to Babylon, leaving just a Jewish remnant. And since that time, things had started to progress. So the temple had been rebuilt, and a guy called Ezra had kind of created a spiritual reawakening, I guess. But they were still in trouble. The walls were completely destroyed, and therefore they were open to attack from all sorts of different directions. And when this report came back to Nehemiah, who was serving in the top court of the Babylonian king, when he heard this, what was happening, he just wept. I sat down and wept. And these strong emotions, he prayed about it, but it led him to ultimately risk his life by asking the king for help. And the king gave him help. He gave him the resources he would need to rebuild the walls and the authority to do it. He became governor of Jerusalem. And in last week's sermon, Helen told us about how he started the wall building and he faced opposition from the various mob bosses that were hanging around. They weren't happy about this guy, Nehemiah, coming and putting up walls. But Nehemiah stopped, he prayed, he brought it to the people, he made some security changes, and ultimately the wall continued to be rebuilt. Now we come to chapter 5. And there's another problem. Let's look at verse 1 to verse 4. This is what it says. Now, the men and their wives raised a great outcry. You know, when the wives are getting involved, things are going to be in trouble. Great outcry against their fellow Jews. Some were saying, we and our sons and daughters are numerous. In order for us to eat and stay alive, we must get grain. Others were saying, we're mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during the famine. Still others were saying, we have had to borrow money to pay the king's tax on our fields and vineyards. So the wall building was going really, really well. Not a problem there. But you can imagine, if you start to push all your attention on that thing, then maybe other things are going to slip and slide a little bit. Cracks were beginning to show, and people were starting to complain. And on top of that, there was a time of famine, forcing people into poverty. But that's not what makes Nehemiah angry. Nehemiah becomes angry because he discovers that wealthy Jews are exploiting their fellow Jews during a time of national rebuilding and hardship. Rather than helping their Jews who were struggling to the extreme, they take advantage of their weaknesses. They charge them interest. They make a profit. They're completely focused on themselves rather than the bigger picture. See, Nehemiah hasn't got a vision problem here. The vision of rebuilding the wall, everyone gets it. Everyone understands it. They think it's a good idea. It's going to bring security, protection, national identity and pride. See, Nehemiah hasn't got a problem communicating the vision to people. But as Jim Collins in his book Good to Great says, great performance is about 1% vision and 99% alignment. So Nehemiah hasn't got a vision problem, he's got an alignment problem. And it makes him angry. Because he's trying to go in this direction and people are pulling in all sorts of different directions. The walls are rising, but inside things are falling apart. And disaster is imminent because people are being driven by their own needs and their own desires. And Nehemiah needs to get everyone on the same page if he's going to stop this project failing completely. And this reminds me, in the New Testament, Paul is one of the early church leaders. He was a church planter, and he wrote many letters to churches all over their area, much of which is in our New Testament. And one letter he writes to a church in Corinth, and it's called 1 Corinthians. And Corinth was pretty exciting church to be part of, but they also had lots of problems. And he points out to them in chapter 11, he says that you have differences, and differences are fine. Differences are not a problem, but there are also divisions as well. And those divisions were the rich were humiliating those that had nothing. That's what it tells us. The rich were humiliating those that had nothing. And the consequences, it tells us in verse 30, it says, that is why many among you are weak and sick. A number of you have fallen asleep. That's a euphemism for a number of you have died. Actually, this unity within the church in Corinth was causing that church to fall apart and actually was causing harm, physical harm, to those people who are part of that church. See, Paul was asking for unity, but not uniformity. Differences are fine. And I love the fact that this church is full of differences. People from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, people who have different views and understandings on different theological matters. That is not a problem. We are not an army that's demanding you to all wear the same, act the same, believe the same. But actually, if we're to prosper as a church, we need to be united in a vision. And we'll come to that a little bit in a moment. We need to be all pulling in the same direction, because working together is winning together. We want to win, don't we? So what does Nehemiah do? Well, we look at verse 7. We find that, first of all, he thinks before he acts or say anything. That's always a good thing when you're angry. Just to stop, take a deep breath, and pause. And then he brings together all those wealthy guys who were guilty of causing this problem. He lays out a possible solution, where, as we heard in the story, give back everything. Stop charging interest and just give it all back. Give back the property. Maybe they're confiscated for because they couldn't pay back their loans. Interestingly, Nehemiah also, this anger gets him to look at himself as well. He talks about the fact in here that maybe he wasn't charging interest to the same extent as the other guys were, but he was offering loans as well. And he had come to the realization that actually this depth of poverty called for gifts and not loans. He looks at his behavior and goes, I need to change what I do. And how do the people respond? Well, they toe the line. They sing from the same hymn sheet. They recognize that they were part of the problem and not the solution. And Nehemiah makes his own sacrifices for the sake of unity, refusing to use his position as governor for gain. Instead, he acts generously, providing food for the poor and hungry of his own. See, sometimes working for unity requires sacrifice on our own parts. Working together equals winning together. I remember in my previous church, I had a very clear sense 1 year, I think it was about 2015, I was looking back through my notes, a very clear sense from God that he said to me, look, you've been working really hard, things are going well, but this year, just step back and watch me at work. I had this sense that God was going to do something. We saw amazing things happen that year. We were only a small church, maybe 60, 70 people. We saw 16 people become Christians that year. Our youth group grew massively. Our connection with the communities grew and deepened. We were really involved in the local school. One Sunday we had 10 baptisms, which was amazing for us. We saw all sorts of things happening. It was a year of favor for us as a church. But the next year in January, I felt God say, this year is going to be different. This year is going to be hard. I did fall apart. The actions of a few individuals led to discord and it led to hurt. And this wasn't just confined to inside the four walls of the church. This started to spread out to the community as well. Our reputation was affected. And many of those things that we saw as a blessing in the previous year started to be undone. To see what we had worked so hard for and what God had blessed us with, torn down by the selfishness of just a few individuals. If we don't work together, we start to see things rapidly fall apart. So here at Holy Baptist Church, I love this church. I love leading this church. I've been here 8 years now. Actually, in August, it'll be 8 years since we moved down here. And we want to be a community here where everyone's welcome, lives are changing, and Jesus is King. We want to be a beacon in our community. Ian mentioned the Beacon Project, which is about building our auditorium out the front there. But actually, just as a stepping stone, that's just part of a larger picture of us wanting to be a light of hope for our community, bringing compassion, standing for justice and mercy. We want to, in word and deeds, in what we say and what we do, reflect Jesus, his love, his values, his acceptance. We want to see thousands come to know Jesus and be transformed by his influence in their lives. Because this church isn't meant to be a religious club. It's meant to be a living example of justice, mercy, and compassion. But as I come to the end, I have two questions for you. First question is this: is that the sort of community you want to be a part of? Is that the sort of church you want to be a part of? Because you don't have to be a Christian. I don't know where you're at this morning. You might be a fully 100% committed follower of Jesus, or you might be just, I'm interested, but I'm not completely sure about it. Regardless of where you're at on that spectrum, you are welcome here. And we want you to feel part of this community. Do you want to be a part of this community? And that leads to the second question. Is actually, are you willing to be a part of that vision? To reach out and welcome and love and hope, standing up for justice and for giving mercy. Because whether if you're part of this community, if we want to see that win, then we all need to work together, regardless of where we are on that spectrum of belief. So are you welcoming? Are you loving? Are you accepting of others despite differences? Are you a beacon in your home and your workplace? Predominantly, you know, if you're a Jesus follower, I'm talking to you, or you are called, if you are following Jesus, to reflect Jesus in what you do. If you're not a Jesus follower, you're off the hook. You don't have to do this. But if you claim to be a follower of Jesus, you need to act like it. And you need to shine brightly. Sometimes, like me, Nehemiah, that means we have to make some sacrifices for the sake of the mission. And maybe for you, it means the Sunday service isn't quite like how you would like it. Or perhaps you're a bit about scared about talking to new people. We mentioned that last week. But imagine a church where people serve one another, speak up for one another, carry burdens together, and lay down privilege to lift someone else up. That's what Nehemiah was building, more than a wall, but a community. And are you willing to help Holy Baptist Church do yourself? Here are just a few questions.
Do your actions create unity or division? How do they affect the reputation of the church? Is faith just what you believe, or does it affect how you behave?
Oh,
interesting stuff.
Interesting, yeah.
Interesting stuff. I think that's the kind of sermon which you need to reflect on, and just the passage as well, because I think that one might take a little while to settle. I think
to digest.
Yes, maybe. Yeah. I think so. I think, yeah, because this is one of those things in church that isn't always particularly obvious or comfortable, right?
What do you mean by that?
So whenever people start talking about like behaviors, either their own or other people's in church, it's always not very comfortable. Do you know what I mean? Because, yeah, it's just, it's trying, yeah, because sometimes you have to challenge people's behaviors, but you have to do it in a way that is loving and, you know, is Christ-centered, right? And that can be, that can be hard when you don't agree with people.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's, yeah, it's not a particularly easy or comfortable thing.
But it's good to challenge.
Yes.
People, but you're talking about just Christians, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not talking about churches, in people that come to church you're talking about.
Yeah, so yeah, because yeah, and it kind of you would imagine it kind of, it's within an established, you know, relationship already, kind of, you know, just people that you know well, and you know, just yeah, because sometimes you kind of get that sense that, you know, people are perhaps struggling with something or whatever it is, and you know, kind of perhaps then going down a bit of a wrong path, you start seeing changes in their behavior. Do you know?
What was the last question? Remind me.
Here we go.
Is faith just what you believe, or does it affect how you behave?
It's got to affect how you behave, isn't it?
Yes,
definitely. Because I mean,
so to love God is to keep His commandments.
Yeah, absolutely, Bible, absolutely. And when, like, I can't remember when I heard this a long time ago, but so when I first became a Christian, somebody said to me that kind of like the path, if you like, is to belong to a church, a faith group, is then you believe, and then you behave.
Yes, yeah.
So it's kind of it's sort of part of that journey, isn't it? Kind of,
yes.
Like to belong, to believe, and then to behave. You can't expect people to behave in a way that is Christ-centered if they don't.
Yeah.
Believe, do you know what I mean?
And that behaving doesn't make you a Christian. It's a good thing to say, isn't
that
it?
That is true. Not by works.
Not by works.
Not by works. No. You'll be saved. Definitely not. Which we can all be thankful for. Yeah.
Praise the Lord. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's out of this love, isn't it, for Jesus, that we want to follow Him and to serve Him. So, you know, there are plenty of people that will turn up to church, but not necessarily follow Jesus.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, and just kind of, you know, I guess for a lot of people that perhaps are in that situation, they will observe, they'll see the people around them and how they behave, how they interact, what they do, kind of like how does their life bear out their faith, you know? So it's always actions speak louder than words, isn't it? Always, I think. So it's a difficult one, because, you know, kind of, yeah, you need to put yourself in situations where you can, you know, use your faith in the right way. Does that make sense?
Use your faith in the right way.
Yeah, so
maybe.
Okay, all right. So if you've got, like, you know, there's always, you know, situations in kind of, you know, work or home life or whatever it is.
What? Give me an example.
Okay, so, like, you know,
is this personal?
Whatever.
I'm
talking generalities, but, you know, kind of like if you're like at work or something, and there's a particularly difficult situation and stuff, and there's a few ways that you can handle it, and perhaps, you know, kind of maintaining your Christian integrity is probably the hardest one, you know, because, you know, perhaps, like, you know, one of your colleagues, you know, is doing something which just really isn't right.
What? Give me an example.
I don't know. Maybe it's one of the finance people, like doing something with expenses or something, something as simple as that, or, you know, and kind of, you know, if you find out about it, surely it's part of your Christian integrity. You have to challenge it. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's your beliefs have to outwork in what you, how you behave. Right.
So standing up for the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. Even when it's difficult, even when it's uncomfortable, you have to challenge, like, perhaps what people consider the status quo. This is how it's done. This is how it's always been done. But does that make it right? You know, kind of.
Yes.
You just have to have that. Remember, you have that power to speak into virtually any situation. You know.
Based on the Bible.
Yeah.
And God's.
Exactly.
Rules, which are always good much. For us.
You know, and just, I mean, obviously that can be very hard to do. That can be very hard to do. And it's not something which I think you would just dive into without thinking about it, praying about it, you know, kind of.
Yes.
Absolutely. But, you know, certainly, you know, kind of reverting back to, you know, things within the church, then obviously that, you know, has to be challenged immediately, kind of. If you can see kind of behaviors that are clearly not Jesus-centered, then, you know, kind of,
yeah,
that needs to be spoken about.
Yeah,
too many times the church buries its head in the sand over issues, serious issues, and, you know, says nothing, does nothing, and the problem just gets exponentially worse. I mean,
that's true.
You only need to turn on the news half the time to see another story of something.
Mm.
You know, and yeah, so it's, yeah, I think
it's all, always with love, isn't it? And
absolutely, yeah, you have to do it out of a sense of love and wanting to see that person on the right path.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah,
and the church as a whole.
I guess it's how you do that as well, isn't it? Kind of, you know, if you've got, you know, you should always, you know, go and speak to the person one-on-one first.
Yeah, isn't it? It says it in the Bible. Yeah,
yeah, it does. You kind of like the ways of kind of to challenge this thing. Kind of, you speak to the person one-on-one, and then perhaps I think the stage two is kind of, you know, bring it to the leaders.
No, take someone with you.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
and stage three.
Yeah,
go to the elders.
And then the church. So yeah, so I get it's
a process.
It is, yeah, and I think it's having that discernment, I suppose, as to how to handle this situation. Yeah, because, you know, just it can be really challenging, quite different, you know, difficult, and yeah, just trying to find your way through that is probably quite.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
What are the other questions? We're running out of time, but
oh, we got
there we go. Do your actions create unity or division? Depends what you're talking about, I suppose.
I mean, you know, but what if Martin decided that we're just gonna Sunday mornings are just gonna be like a praise and worship session with a 5-minute talk, and the rest of it is sung worship. How about that? Do you think that might cause division? Do you think that might cause?
Yes, that would cause division.
Yeah, or actually, we don't need to read the Bible in church. We can do without. You know.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean that obviously that's quite an extreme example.
Things that challenge the biblical perspective, isn't it? So it's going off course.
Yeah, totally. Something as drastic as that, or perhaps like, you know, just you start a group or something, but it's quite an exclusive group, like a clique of some kind in, you know, in church, and kind of like you've got these high and mighty ideas about how to progress it, but if it's a clique and it's not going to benefit the whole body, then why are you doing it, kind of thing? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. It's and just kind of the way you talk to people, the way that you speak about other people, you know, because that can obviously create a lot of problems, can't it? So even if perhaps you didn't intend it to be received in that way, then, you know, just it's been your intent has been misunderstood, which can obviously create big divisions sometimes.
Mm.
You know, can't it? There's been enough churches that have, you know, self-destructed over, you know, quite simple things to start with, you know, kind of, or rumors about things or whatever it is, you know, kind of, you have, there's so many opportunities for things to go wrong, you know, particularly in church, when I guess you have,
because people are involved.
Messy. If anytime people are involved, it's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, totally. It's, yeah. And I think, you know, there's so many things which you can do to foster that spirit of unity. And it's, I guess it's just choosing how to do that in the best way that doesn't leave people out, that kind of, that brings people together, you know, because there's always a million different things you can try and do, you know, within churches to have that sort of, that sense of community and unity, kind of, you know, there's all the different stuff that we do, you know, within HBC. You would hope that all of it kind of is with the purpose of bringing people to God and building that community.
Mm.
You know, so.
Thinking about the passage.
Yeah.
They they basically ended up, rather than taking interest on the money, they ended up giving it to them, because I think it says he's given back 100%
of
the money. So they're basically giving them. Do you think, as a church, we could give more, maybe financially, to those who haven't?
I think something like that is quite difficult, particularly in this day and age when obviously, you know, people's finances are very heavily challenged. I think for a lot of people, it's a very difficult financial situation. I see what you mean. I mean, maybe there is more that we could do in certain situations and circumstances, you know, perhaps around like food banks, things. I mean, I don't know. Have you got an example in mind, or like what's your thinking?
Thinking about the passage where they were like charging interest to their fellow, like people at church, you could say. They were lending the money, but charging them interest. I mean, I suppose we don't lend money, as far as I'm aware, to people, but is there a way that we, those that have got more money, could give more?
I suppose that's very much an individual thing, isn't it? Like, you know, for the individual, kind of like, you know, kind of God gives you certain resources, and how do you use those resources? You know, so I think that's kind of for the individual, but I see what you mean. It's definitely like something which, you know, all of us need to think about, absolutely, because what could I personally do to help someone in what the situation,
or,
you know, perhaps, you know, that I think there is like a pastoral fund, like for emergencies and stuff, you know, but perhaps you could give into that, and, you know, obviously trust that the church is going to use that in the right way to help people in serious need. I don't know, something like that, but yeah, you could certainly look at that, couldn't you?
Interesting.
This passage in particular is a bit, it's quite challenging, isn't it? Just because of like how the individual needs to act, and how they
and how we live. We need to be thinking about how others are living financially in this instance, but people might be struggling in other ways. And when you're talking about challenging people, we need to think how's that going to be received? You know, can they actually do something about it?
Whenever we kind of, you talk about like money and resources, that kind of stuff, it's always a bit more difficult, and that does need to be handled carefully. You know, just But I think for each person needs to think about that, you know, person as to how they can benefit other people. So
definitely. Yeah. Good. I think we're done there.
I don't know. I think there's probably a lot more we could dig into.
You could, yeah.
We could be here for hours. Yeah. But I'm sure
they don't want to hear it.
Probably not. Hey, who knows?
No, it's been good.
It's always good chat. So thank you very much for joining us this morning. I hope what we're chatting about has prompted some thoughts and, you know, feelings and ideas in you, and just thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on
any
the podcast.
Questions, they can email in.
What's
all that?
Of course, yes, yeah, in the
you'll
video.
Get all that in a minute.
Yeah,
good
in
stuff.
The video. So yeah, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you guys soon. Take care.
Bye.
Cheers.
That is it for today's episode. Well done for joining us and making it here to the end. Hopefully you feel slightly encouraged at least, or that you want to follow Jesus just that little bit more closely. You can join us in the room on a Sunday, but if that's too big of a next step for you, did you know you could also join us online for a video feed to one of our morning services? Do get in contact with us if you'd like to find out how you can do that. If you've got any questions about what you've heard today, or about anything that's to do with following Jesus and just church lives, things we might be able to help you with, we've got an email address just for you. It's gotquestions@hawleybaptist.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you there. Don't forget to share this. If you've enjoyed it, somebody else might do too. Share it with your friends. If you want to keep up to date with all that we do, hit that subscribe button to maintain that link with us and all that we produce. You can find it as well, links to these different things, on hawleybaptist.org.uk/media as well. Thank you for joining us again. We pray God blesses you, and we will look forward to you joining us next time.